Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Today on the show, we're speaking to Anthony LaPay, executive producer and showrunner for season 2 of the History Channel series, Unidentified, Inside America's UFO Investigation.
It's a completely valid question for anyone to ask whether these guys are still working for the government and are involved in some sort of disinformation campaign. Because if you know anything about the intelligence world, that would be a pretty banana story, in my opinion. But you can never rule that out in the world of intelligence. Deception is at its heart. And what that disinformation is could be many different things. Are they covering up the reality of UFOs? Mm-hmm. Are they, or is it some sort of limited hangout where it's like, are they part of this slow disclosure? Or are they, you know, some people say just merely running interference on advanced weapons programs. And that's their true mission, which again, going back to the Navy's statement that these are not ours, raises the stakes of that claim really high. And you'll see in this season, we broach it head on as well.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Anthony, welcome to Somewhere in the Skies.
Thanks. I love the name of your podcast, by the way. It's cool.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's, you know, we all dream of having UFO in our podcast name, but I wanted to open it up, keep it a little broad, and yeah, we're still looking for those answers somewhere in the skies, as you guys are over on Unidentified. So we're definitely going to talk about season 2 of your show, Unidentified, but before we do that, man, I got to get the origin story. How did you get connected to this particular project? Did you have any interest in UFOs prior to this? Yeah, what's the origin story of your work on Unidentified?
Good question. I for years ran a website called the Guerrilla News Network, which you may be a little too young, you might not remember it, but it was a kind of groundbreaking, if I may say so, kind of citizen journalism platform that also allowed people to create their own profiles and kind of run their kind of a, it was like a blogging platform. It also had an interactive editing function where people could collaborate and write articles together. So and then it had a huge, very robust chat platform, very, you know, kind of in the vein of Reddit. But when we're always looking at, we looked at a lot of intelligence related stuff and what, you know, government secrets. And I remember when the first Disclosure Project press conference happened back in the, you know, the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Greer had brought these government people out, and that always stuck. You know, I'd never really been interested in UFOs, but that event and the fact that there were so many government officials former government officials coming forward always kind of stuck in my mind. Like, that's really interesting. And then one day, literally, it went down like this. I'm at the History Channel. I work for a division inside A&E Networks. It's now called Six West Media. It's basically an internal production company there. And I'm just a freelance showrunner and director. And I was doing a film about Bobby Kennedy, and I was wrapping it up, and they said, "Hey, you know, we had these two guys that we want you to meet." So we went into a conference room, and there was Lou and Chris, and they, you know, start talking about this program that Lou was part of. And sort of, you know, what they believe, which is that there are things engaging with our military pilots in particular that they don't believe either belong to the U.S. military or our adversaries. And I kind of was just like, what? And I, you know, and I looked up who these guys were, and I sort of had nightmares for a couple weeks about that. And especially the Melon's bearing and the way he spoke was particularly chilling. And that was the beginning. And then they asked me to do the show, and I was like, to go follow these guys and find out, like, hopefully, you know, the truth behind whether they're either totally crazy or there's something real there. Either way, it was like going to be a good show, you know, because they're such fascinating people. So I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'm down for the ride.
Yeah, I'm so happy you did, man, because I mean, a lot of people have commented on all of season one and what we've seen so far of season two, just how different it is from most of these UFO shows out there. I mean, some of them are just God awful embarrassing. And then, you know, you have the ones that strive to bring legitimacy, but there's only so much you can do with civilian witnesses, you know, and claims and testimony. But when you guys attack this from every angle and having the people you had involved, it just upped, you know, the credibility of not only, I guess, infotainment, as we could call it, you know, UFOs on television, but also just the topic in general.
Yeah, thanks. You know, we tried to do something that, you know, was journalistically sound, that was really, and I think even in this season, we kind of upped the ante on that regard. Whereas in the first season, it was a little more self-enclosed. It was, you know, in the sense that when we were looking at alternative explanation, you know, terrestrial explanations, if you will, of these craft, you know, it was mostly kind of Steve and Chris and Lou kind of spitballing it amongst themselves. Whereas this season, you know, we're looking at, we interviewed other, you know, experts, people who've spent a lot of time, like Bill Scott, who was a Air Force flight test engineer and, you know, was editor at Aviation Week, who really became fascinated by the topic and had a lot of inside sources at places like Nellis and Area 51 and others. So, you know, we really strive to provide all possible explanations. And we continue to do that, through this season. Because I think I do agree. A lot of other UFO shows, you know, spend a lot of time leaving that, or don't spend the time. They leave all that information on the cutting room floor and really are kind of pushing a particular agenda. And we're tried to, you know, even though this show is definitely told from the point of view of Elizondo and Mellon and company, there is our own editorial balance that's mm-hmm. going on.
Right. Well, I'd love to touch on what you said there, that in terms of between season one and season two. You know, season one, you introduced us to the Navy UFO videos and to the Stars Academy, catch us up to speed with everything that's going on. But season two, it took a different format or template, I guess. So yeah, would you mind maybe touching a little on what the major differences are between these?
Yeah. I mean, the format kind of organically came out of the stories that we got, because we, at the end of, if people remember, at the end of season one, we put out a call to action, you know, email for people to send in their stories. And, you know, somewhat as a shot in the dark, like, hey, you know, might as well just see what we could get. And we ended up, it you know, worked spectacularly. Almost, there was almost too much. There's so many emails. I spent a good part of last summer, right around the same time last summer, sifting through these emails, reading them, reaching out to people and trying to, you know, figure out who was, you know, crazy, who was legit, who was somewhere in between, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, we ended up just, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails. So I quickly realized I kind of came up with this concept, which the underlying theme, if there was like a subtitle for this season, I called it Out of the Shadows. And because what I realized is, you know, there's so many of these stories that go back years that, you know, we could really create an incredible mosaic of hearing as many of the stories as possible. So my goal was to find to really narrow in as many as we could, and the ones that were, you know, and really talk to those people and almost, you know, I wouldn't say cast them, but really figure out who was going to be. You know, as you can tell from even the guys that you've seen so far, these are like really serious people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's winner of the Navy Cross, There's people who are working in intelligence positions. There's very serious people who devoted their career to the service of the United States. So, you know, we really decided that, but this, that this season would be different, and there would be a lot more stories because we had, you know, I keep forgetting to actually count them up, but it's something like 25 never before heard stories you're going to see in this season. People who are coming forward, and pretty much all of them from a military background. And most of the stories happening when they were in the military, serving. So organically that became, okay, so let's try to look at the patterns, right, around what they're talking about. Can we relate them to what the pilots are seeing today? Can we relate them to other patterns, like nukes? That's, you know, an ongoing theme that Chris Mellon in particular believes is really important, that why are these things being seen around nuclear assets? Mm-hmm. So that's what this Saturday night is looking at, kind of some new stories that haven't been told, that are fascinating. And again, just super legit people speaking. The format of this kind of testimonial multiple story episode built just sort of organically about how we found our stories. And then other stories started to come in. You know, people are constantly emailing Lou with stories. There's so many more that we, you know, we just couldn't have time for, or we couldn't track, you know, we couldn't track down, or people didn't, sometimes people contact him and, but they don't want to go on the, you know, on TV, right? There's a difference between saying, "Hey Lou, I have the story I need you to know about." Right. And then agreeing to have their face on TV is, those are big, you know, there's a little big difference between those two things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, well, that brings up another good point. How is it, as, you know, the producer, executive producer and showrunner, how challenging is it to work in this, you know, with these people that I'm sure some of them, if we're talking all military, that might have security oaths or, like you said, remain anonymous, things like that. How is it for you dealing with all this, I would assume, red tape at times and, bureaucracy and all of that?
To be honest, we don't deal, we're dealing directly with these guys as mm-hmm. private individuals. We didn't go through the public affairs, and even really in the first season, we got these guys to talk on their own because they felt it was so important to speak out. So, yeah, we kind of avoid, I mean, really being a journalist, if you can avoid the, you know, the red tape, you do. So that's what we do. We don't really, we're just trying to get the information out there. Obviously, you know, we're super cognizant of not sharing anything that would divulge any secrets. As we've seen in this new news that has come out recently, they really have one step, you know, foot in the door with the government. They're constantly, we saw this. I remind people that the recent news about this call for a multi-agency task force that the Senate Intelligence Committee is asking for in the new appropriations bill, and the revelation that there's an ongoing program inside the Navy, you know, we disclosed that. We didn't say it was in the Navy, but in season one, in the last episode, you see Lou going and meeting with guys who are still involved in the program.
Right.
And those guys, and you see, you know, Lieutenant Graves, you're there right before he goes to testify in front of members of that committee and others. And then he comes back and tells Lou how it goes, if you remember all that. And that was all being coordinated through these same people that are now being, you know, their names haven't been released, but that new program, if you will, that's ongoing. That's been an ongoing thing that Lou has been open to say. You know, it's interesting now that now people are realizing, oh, wait, actually it is going on. And also, you know, and then there was just the whole crazy part about, you know, the Pentagon even denying that Lou had any part in any UFO program. Really interesting twist, you know, while we're working with him, and, you know, we can see obviously that he's going to, you know, our cameras are there while he's in D.C. meeting with congressmen and others. So that was interesting to say the least. I still can't tell you what is going on in the, you know, Byzantine halls of power that, you know, behind that series of events.
I'm sure it is. And, you know, with time, I'm sure we'll
exactly. I feel like in 10 or 20 years, it'll all come out, you know.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, this is a clear indication that these things take time. And I think a lot of people have to keep in mind, too, like, it's not like the DOD or the Navy is just dropping this stuff because they want to. I mean, people like Lou and To the Stars and the exposure that you guys have given to the work they're doing, they worked their asses off to get these things going and get these things in motion. So I think, like you said, these things were in motion in season one and probably even before you guys even began filming. We're just seeing the end result of them. And I try to tell people too, like, just be patient. Like, these things take time. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that if you're, you know, people, what's really interesting now is Chris is on Twitter, right?
Yep.
And I just was seeing some of the stuff he's been tweeting about, you know, which some of this, you know, we get into this in later episodes. We actually look back, you know, we actually have a whole episode later on that's really asking the question, kind of a Nimitz redux, looking back at the Nimitz and the Roosevelt cases. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, he says all this is part of the show as well, but it's like, if you read his Twitter, the extent at which he is completely confident that what both of these groups of pilots are seeing is not some special access program, and that he's run it up the ladder, and that when the Navy says it's not ours, they're not lying, right? That's at the end of the day, that's what it really comes down to, right?
Yeah.
Like, if the Navy is saying it's not ours, and it, you know, you're left with the two other possibilities. And that's kind of like what Marco Rubio just said the other day. He's actually, on the balance of things, he'd be happier if it turned out it wasn't the Russians or the Chinese, because that's what would really keep him up at night, is the Tic Tac or some of these other things, you know, is a Chinese object zipping around our restricted training areas.
Absolutely. That would be
So that's where you just, you know, I always come back to that logic. Once you start playing out the logic of that, you end up in a weird place.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, the fact that we can only hope it's aliens is
it's a pretty weird thing.
It is.
I'm surprised that more people have not picked up on what an interesting statement that was, right, by a senator.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty crazy. But hey, it's 2020, Anthony. Anything clearly can happen, yeah.
Nothing would surprise me.
Nope. Well, let's talk, if you don't mind, maybe a little episode specific. Two episodes have aired so far of the show, the first being UFOs in Combat, like you mentioned. And like you said, we got all new military cases, which is just amazing that this many military personnel throughout history are willing to come forward and talk about this is awesome and something we haven't had before. So what did you find most interesting about this first one?
You know, each one of those cases was equally interesting. Mm-hmm. The B-52 story, I thought, was really, really interesting in the sense that this thing was just flying at the speeds that they saw it flying, and he, you know, that they were actually taking pictures of the radar screen. And, you know, so frustrating. Obviously, we couldn't get those pictures. But that case, I thought, was just absolutely fascinating. You know, they're in the middle of the Pacific. You know, it's not the heat of battle. You could argue that the case in Kosovo was some sort of optical illusion or something, or refraction, or even, you know, we posed the question whether it was a laser being shot against the clouds, or, you know, there's a lot of, we're in a war zone. There was maybe a lot of weird stuff happening, right? Zipping around. Whereas this thing was like just described as a real clear object coming right at them, taking a right turn and then shooting straight up into space. You know, this on Saturday night, we have a story, probably one of my favorite stories that we have because I'll give you a hint, you know, without giving it away. You know, the rest of this season is all, you're just going to see more and more military witnesses and in some ways ratcheting up their credibility, because on Saturday night you're going to hear a story from a guy who is sees a object in the Aurora Borealis and has just a very really interesting story about what happens. But what's so interesting about this guy is that he is a high altitude survival expert for the Air Force. So he actually trains guys currently, not for the Air Force, but he trains people to survive at high altitude flying. So here's a guy who is currently a professor, but had a long career in the Air Force. In particular, basically is an expert in everything at high altitudes, you know, 60,000 feet and above altitude, right? So he's saying he's seeing something in the Aurora Borealis in the upper atmosphere, and that, you know, he is just, you know, literally 100% clear, is not some sort of weather anomaly or atmosphere condition. And that is just, you'll see, this guy is just so serious, and he's just such, you know, he's just has an advanced degree in exactly that, and teaches future pilots about how to survive at high altitude. So he you know, he's constantly just flying at a high altitude, you know, I don't want to say how many hours, but hundreds if not thousands of hours up in that area, right? So that's just fascinating when you get people like that, who is like their exact area of expertise, seeing something in that milieu. It's just,
yeah, at that altitude, nonetheless, you know, which again, like, we know human beings wouldn't really be able to survive. Right. Like you said, that's literally his job, to figure out where that barrier is. But,
and when you hear what happened, what the craft does, you know, you'll see from his description, it's clearly not a, you know, a comet or, you know, some kind of debris. Anyway, it's fascinating. That's the kind of thing we have coming up. There's just a lot of just really unique. That's what I was so excited about from a storyteller point of view. And just visually, you know, as you can tell from this season, we did kind of up the ante doing, you know, these recreations of the events, and with some visual effects, and really working with the people directly to really, you know, we were having them send us drawings. So we were really like, okay, what it looked like, and really trying to get exactly how, what they experienced, trying to visualize that. So that was, that's just fascinating. I think the other highlight coming up for everyone is, we switch gears and actually have a whole episode about civilian, airline pilots, active pilots, as well as people from FAA, NORAD, and those are stories that have never been told before as well. That's the show app. I'll be honest, with the one that really sends the most chills up my spine, because you have airline pilot talking about something, you know, coming way too close to, you know, plane full of 200 people, right? It just, right. There's something really relatable, obviously, for all of us. And, you know, it's a little different than an FAA team flying around something when you're in a plane
with no weapons, nonetheless.
Yeah, and there's just a bunch of civilians, you know, there's this, and these pilots, you can really tell, again, this is where, you know, how I just have so much respect for airline pilots. I mean, how many people every day do it, you know, their job all has 200 souls, you know, lives in their hands, right? On a daily basis. And you see that sense of responsibility and that bearing when they tell this story, that these guys are not, and these guys know the skies, you know, it's like, they know what, you know, weather condition is. They know these guys are seeing objects, you know, whatever those objects are. I will never, you know, I'm not going to guess, but they're seeing real objects, in my opinion. And they're really freaked out by it.
What's up, guys? Ryan Sprague here, and I'm just dropping in to remind you about our Patreon campaign. Somewhere in the Skies is always free to consume, but it's not free to create. So if you want to help the show on a monthly basis, we have tons of rewards for you in return, including shoutouts on the show and website, bonus content and episodes, and free merch. Want to be my guest or pick a topic for the show? You can do that too. So if you'd like to learn more and to help support the show, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you, and keep looking up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Well, episode 2, Anthony, the triangle mystery. This one really stuck out to me. I had a triangular UFO sighting as a child, which is kind of what got me into all this stuff to begin with. But I really obviously related to this one, and it seemed like we really got to know Chris Mellon in this one, which was cool. So yeah, can we expect more episodes where we get to know Lou, Chris, Steve, all these guys a little better?
Yeah. There's a really one of my other favorite episodes is we go down to South America with Lou, and it's kind of a road trip, and he meets with a lot of active duty military people, including literally the head of the Air Force for a large country in South America, who then they have a fascinating conversation. And you really get to see Lou in action and kind of you get to know him a little better. And then either you actually kind of reveal something about his own experience, which is interesting in that episode as well. I won't give too much away there. Yeah, that's what I'm glad you picked up on that. I was proud of this episode, the triangle episode, where you really got to see Mellon out in the field, and you really got to see his theory on these things. He's fascinating, you know, kind of like in, you know, David Marler. He's not obsessed to the point of David Marler, but he, like Marler, just believes that there's something going on with these triangle craft that can't be explained. There's just too many data points. And that was, you know, that's why we kind of leaned into that, the Hudson Valley story. Those, you know, we went up there and we actually interviewed many more people that day. Then, you know, we could fit in. But there's just hundreds of people that were just seeing them over, you know, for over such long periods of time. And clearly, I'm sure some of them were conflating, you know, a cargo plane or some other kind of plane flying over the area. But these other stories, when the craft are flying right over their house and hovering, and, you know, when you have cops telling you that, it's hard to disregard that there wasn't some very, very large craft flying over. And actually what's interesting is there's a story from that we actually originally had in that episode, but we moved into the episode on Saturday night, the nuke episode, where a guy describes a craft very similar to one of the triangles, but we moved it, you'll see why, into this episode. And we actually have two witnesses on that, and it's pretty mind-blowing how it changed his life. But yeah, that Hudson Valley story is just, you know, I was just actually up there for a little while, and I became friends with a farmer down the road from his house that I was staying in. And I said, yeah, you know, I just, you know, we had learned about these sightings back, you know, in the 80s around here. And he said, oh yeah, my mom saw a craft that flew right over the house and just stayed there. And then his wife came out and she said, yeah, when I was a kid, we saw this craft fly over, and we became so obsessed. We used to camp out in our yard trying to see it again. And it's just like all of a sudden it was just like, it's just a common thing for these to live up there to see these things. And you're just like, what the heck? It's fascinating.
Yeah, it was such a large wave too, that of course someone knows somebody who saw something, which is fascinating. I mean, it's you don't get that often.
Yeah, and when the whole parkway, the Tectonic, shut down and people got out of their cars and the thing was just hovering right over. I mean, again, there's definitely, as we see, there are explanations, right, that you can argue. I think a really strong point that Bill Scott makes in that episode, you know, Jim Simivan makes a really strong point at the end, right, that there's no way they would fly a secret craft over and spook people like they did, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think there is a strong argument, in particular related to these triangles, that maybe that is the point, is that they're tracking the reaction to see what kind of stealth it had, right? They, you know, they're basically using these people as guinea pigs in the same way, you know, they are interested to see who looks up. Can it be heard? I don't know. There's some decent countervailing evidence, I think, related to the triangle phenomenon that I thought was really important to get in there. But it does spiral when you really dig into an archive like Marler, that there's just so many. There's the consistency to these stories is fascinating.
Yeah, the triangles, I think, always beg the most questions. Like you said, they come up with the theory of mapping. Are they mapping our terrain? That's why they're so slow and they're triangular. So that was fascinating. That was something I'd never really thought about. Yeah, why do these particular UFOs move so slowly? And obviously stealth is one reason, but another is, you know, are they surveying the area? Are they gauging public reaction or acknowledgement? I think you're right. I think there's the biggest mystery lay somewhere in those triangles, man. I'm glad you guys tackled it.
Cool. I'm glad we did it justice.
Yeah. Well, moving to just a couple listener questions here, Anthony, before we wrap up, if that's cool. Shane on Facebook asks, you kind of answered this, I think, at the beginning, but do you guys have government liaisons that sort of guide you, you know, when it comes to security stuff? Or are these just people that are coming forward on their own?
No, we have no relationship to the government at all. You know, we're independent journalists. We're independent fundamentally from TTSA. We have this is a show produced by A&E. It's not, I think to set, you know, for a lot of people, there's confusion. You know, obviously Tom DeLonge is involved in shaping the vision of the show. And it was really kind of his impetus that got it on the air. But this is a show produced by A&E. So kind of, you know, we're following these guys on their journey. Obviously there's things, you know, it's a totally unscripted show. Nothing is staged, but obviously there's things that are happening because of the show. You know, I don't think Lou would have gone to South America for, you know, primarily just, you know, cause I don't know if TTSA has the money to send him to South America. You know, obviously we're sending him on to investigate stuff, in the service of the show, but we are also following these guys along the way and in their own journey. And they are, you know, actively building these patterns and they are actively investigating this stuff. And you're seeing that in real time. So, to answer the question, we do allow these guys to make sure that there's nothing, we're not compromising any security clearances or things like that. But that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's a good distinction to make, because I think there are those people out there who do worry, like, you know, is the show being shaped by the History Channel or for a particular narrative, this, that. But I think you're right. We do see you guys at A&E, you're following this company as they grow and as they influence.
I do think the narrative, we are following their lead on the narrative. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
If I was doing this show independently, I don't know what it would be, but it might not be their narrative. The fundamental theme, right, that Elizondo and Mellon believe is, are centered around a national security threat. These guys are, that's what they did for a living. And they still consider themselves even though they don't work for the government, what they're doing is sort of continuing that work in the private sphere. So those themes of national security and the potential threat, right? Not the threat, the potential threat that these might pose and trying to identify them. That is their mission. And that's what we're trying to follow. That's the simplest way to look at how this show came to be and the framing around the narrative. For some people have problems with that, right? Some people are like, well, they're fear-mongering and the you know, UFOs are, how do we know they're not here to help us? Well, we don't. But that's and I'm not trying to I definitely try not to make it a fear-mongering show, you know, but I do. But I also am trying to be honest to, like, that is their frame. For them, their national security guys, anything that's unknown that is showing an interest in our military is, you know, by sort of logic, right, ipso facto,
yeah,
a potential threat.
Absolutely. We don't know what it is. And I think, you know, the human condition itself is we are a defensive species. So, I mean, yeah, everything, if we don't know what it is a potential threat. I think that's a good point, Anthony. I mean, so many people, it's so divisive in the quote unquote UFO community. You've got the people who believe it's all love and light and space brothers, and then those who think they're going to come and invade. And it's, I think the answer is somewhere in between, because we don't know what it is, and it will always be a potential threat. So no, it makes perfect sense for a show where you have the former head of, you know, counter terrorism and whatnot, or someone who worked within that sector, as the main person. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, we're that's what these guys, that's the frame that they have. So that's the frame we're following. So, and I think you can argue whether you can argue whether you agree with it or not. It's not really for me to judge. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, that's the story.
All right. Well, this one kind of ties into that too. Anthony, Raquel on Twitter asks, throughout the show, Chris Mellon, Elizondo, and even Steve Justice, in Raquel's opinion, she stressed, they give a sense that they all know more than they can share on the show. I'm sure you've heard this before. Is this something you're willing to address at all, or is Raquel just hoping this is the case?
It's absolutely. I think they'd be the first to admit it. I mean, they openly admit it. We actually even, and I'm sure there's places in this season where we kind of get meta and reference that as well. I think in the first season we did. There are moments where Lou saying, look, I remember, one time he's on the top of that mountain in Catalina, and he's like, look, I know a lot more about what's going on here, but I can't tell you. And the assumption to me is that there's a lot of sensitive military sites in that area, right? Mm. But absolutely. These guys all know. I mean, Steve Justice is a walking repository of both the technologies that he worked on, but also the methods, right? Of how things are tested. The secrets are not just technology. The secrets are sources and methods too. So all these guys, especially as you can see, Justice is very, you know, careful to not talk too much about how things work. They are absolute, and, you know, and Lou, if you take him on face value, that is primarily like his motivation in what he's doing on our show, is because he can't tell you everything he knows. He's trying to find other people who could sort of almost be his proxies to tell their stories because he can't. And that's absolutely true. And as I said, they're the first to admit it. What they know, I mean, I think it's a valid question. I don't disregard anyone. And that's what I found was very cool about both Chris and Lou, as you'll see in this season. And we broach this topic in season one, and we kind of dig deeper into it in season two, is it's a completely valid question for anyone to ask, whether these guys are still working for the government and are involved in some sort of disinformation campaign. That is a completely valid question for anyone to ask, because if you know anything about the intelligence world, you know, that would be a pretty banana story, in my opinion, but you can never rule that out in the world of intelligence. You know, deception is at its heart. So it'd be naive to think that they weren't, and what the disinformation is could be many different things. They could, right? They could be, are they covering up the reality of UFOs? Mm-hmm. Is it some sort of limited hangout where it's like are they part of this slow disclosure? Or are they some people say, just merely running interference on advanced weapons programs? And, And that's their true mission, which again, going back to the Navy's statement that these are not ours, raises it, the stakes of that claim really high. The Navy is publicly coming out to the public and saying that it's a pretty big deal, right? And if you have these guys running, continually running this, you know, an alleged fiction that you know, UFOs are real and that's not our technology, that to me is like, that would be a really, you know, one of the bigger stories, right?
Yeah.
It's still a valid question. So I never disparage anyone to ask that question. And you'll see in this season, we broach it head on as well.
Oh, okay. Interesting. That's great. Yeah. See, there you go. I mean, you guys, you're covering all the bases and you know, like, you're not, so many of these shows, they think their audiences are idiots, you know, when it comes to this stuff. And I think something like what you guys are doing is you're stating the facts and you're, you know, your audience is a lot smarter than I think people usually give them credit for when it comes to the entertainment industry. So, I really respect that. I mean, you're not just taking it at face value and you're asking the tough questions. So I think that's what really sets it apart. And, you did mention the Navy. And this one kind of just popped into my head here. So I might as well just ask it, man. Army, we know to the stars is working with in a capacity when it comes to possible materials. Navy obviously has been the most vocal about it. Why are we not hearing anything from the damn Air Force? Like the people who we think would be the most vocal about all this. You know, do you have a personal opinion on that?
I am not going to comment because that's a question we literally ask in an upcoming episode.
Oh, boom. That is the perfect answer. I should have known. All right.
It's you'll see. That's definitely a question we ask.
Ah, cool. Yep. There we go. Didn't even have to ask it. All right. So our last listener question here, Anthony. Steven on Twitter asks, we know that To the Stars Academy is working with the Army. Will the show touch on any of this when it comes to these possible crashed vehicles that we heard about in the New York Times? You know, yeah. What's up with that?
You know, I'll speak to that. Yeah, we actually don't go into the materials, as you know, we considered looking at those. There's just not enough information on the materials that they have, and just that whole. It's honestly, it's almost like its own show. So we really do special on that because it is. It's also. I'll just be honest. It's just so expensive to actually do the kind of tests that need to be done on those things. Mm-hmm. We just felt like we couldn't really push the story forward because the next level of tests that need to be done are so expensive that we just didn't have the resources to really dig into that science. That level of science is somewhat beyond our purview. So, but I think it's absolutely fascinating and I can't wait to hear what TTSA finds with the materials they have and these other rumored materials around. And, you know, that whole part of the story obviously is so huge because if any of that, you know, bears fruit, it's going to, you know, be a major revelation. We just couldn't figure out a way to push the story forward within our resources.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the big struggle, I think, in the scientific world alone is trying to get the funding to do something like that. So it makes sense that, yeah, why not team up with the Army who would have the resources to do those tests, but they're going to take time. And again, I think we have to stress, like, if anyone wants answers to the UFO question, like, get ready to wait because we've been waiting for centuries now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have for you here, Anthony. Where and when can we find Unidentified Season 2?
So it's on Saturday nights, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 Central on the History Channel. And then I think it replays later, but, you know, set your DVRs if you can't watch it. But yeah, please tune in. You know, the more people that tune in now, the more possibility of you getting a third season. So
Yeah, and we better, man, because, I mean, again, I think you guys have made waves unlike anything the UFO community or researchers have been able to do in the past 70 years. So, you know, from one UFO person to the next, I have to thank you for everything you guys are doing. I can't wait to see what you come up with next.
It was really a pleasure talking with you, Ryan. Great show. Keep up the great work, and thanks for all the support.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network.
Hey guys, Ryan here, and I'm just dropping in to tell you all about a podcast I recently discovered that has me binging their entire back catalog. It's that fun, that good, and right up my alley, as I know it most likely will be for you as well. Guide to the Unknown is a podcast about horror. Every week, sibling hosts Kristen Anderson and Will Rogers discuss spooky pop culture, urban legends, and the paranormal, while keeping it cozy and fun. Some of my favorite episodes include a tour of the unique Disney haunted mansions around the world, the account of a seance they attended in a paranormal bookstore, and the real-life story behind one of my all-time favorite movies, The Conjuring. They've covered Stonehenge, crop circles, Men in Black, Bigfoot, and even techno ghosts. Yes, you heard that right. And you'll hear a new episode every Friday on all major podcast apps, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I also have to mention that one of their most recent episodes covered the Allagash alien abduction incident. And they bring us up to speed with this highly controversial case. So grab your Afghan temple ball and give that episode a listen. Don't know what Afghan Temple Ball is? You will after listening. So head on over to www.gttupod.com for all social media links and to enjoy Guide to the Unknown podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.